Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today I'll be interviewing Daniel John Carey. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you'll receive alerts when new episodes are available on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, please leave me a review on iTunes or Spotify. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ohio, in Cleveland, in a neighborhood with lots of people, children and families. And it was a almost kind of, there's a lot of older houses mixed in with a lot of trees. Yeah.
So what was your experience like growing up in the Midwest?
I loved the outside, the outdoors, the trees. I spent a lot of time outdoors. I had a garden starting when I was seven. I grew food starting when I was little. I took a class that was offered through my school where they taught us how to plant gardens. The school had a garden area, so I got into that, and I still garden my whole entire life. I grow food. But the Midwest, I didn't like the winter so much. Cleveland very flat, so there's nothing much. There's no skiing. There's a place to go tobogganing, but that was at a distance. There was a river nearby about 2 miles away, so we'd walk down there, some of my friends and I, and we'd go swimming, or we'd take inner tubes and float down the river and stuff like that. But my family life was very contentious, so I liked to stay outside. And that was apparently what my parents preferred, to just stay away. And I often even slept outside without even people knowing. So I was very connected to the outdoor world. And there was an abandoned farm that was turned into sort of a city park. And they cleared out most of it and had baseball fields and stuff, but there were a lot of the woods left, and there were fruit trees and berry bushes and stuff. So I ate a lot of fruit for free in the summer, and I didn't have to go back to the house. And that was my experience.
Wow, that sounds like rough to sleep outside, because inside is so contentious. What was it? How would you describe your experience growing up in such a dysfunctional household?
I always was stressed out about being around the house or near the house or in the house, or even family members being anywhere around, because I was definitely in large families. When there's someone who's abused, it's usually one person it's focused on. And apparently I was that person, and I was the youngest of six boys, plus there were a couple of girls. And I was always kind of, when I was outside, I felt better, but I often was focused on protecting myself and strategizing what I would do and knowing where the exit was and stuff like that, because things could get out of control very quickly. It could be violent very quickly. There was a lot of mental health problems and alcoholism and stuff like that going on, and regret. When I was four, before I was four, it was a lot different. We lived in a different house. Things were much better. My mother made money as an opera singer at weddings and funerals, and she had just recorded some albums to try to get a manager. She had some producers interested in her, taking her to New York. But when I was four, and that's when she had her eighth baby. And then my father was in a car accident. He was driving drunk by himself, and he went through the windshield, and he injured his brain. And then his personality after that was always not fun, very angry, frustrated, not happy, didn't really spend time with us at all after that. And then a few months later, this explains it, the rest of my childhood. That's why I'm telling you. A few months later, the house started on fire in the middle of the night. And during that fire, my mother fell down the stairs and she hit her head landing on cement, and she ended up in the hospital for weeks. And so she also experienced a personality changing brain injury. So after I was 4 and a half, the rest of my childhood was very dark, and we had no aunts or uncles. My grandparents had died before I was born. There was no outside influence, and the house was out of control, and we were poor, and our parents had lacked interest in us after that, and we did whatever we wanted. So my brothers were out of control. I was more like the kid who was good, but I tried to stay away because I didn't like being randomly pushed or hit or shoved or insulted, or I didn't really talk growing up. Mm-hmm. So I had an unusual accent, and I never spoke in the house really hardly at all, and nobody ever had any conversations with me in the house, in the family. So I would go out and I would talk to other children, and I really didn't know that I had a really bad accent until I was in high school, and more and more people kept commenting about it, and one of the teachers eventually requested that a speech therapist come in for some of the students. And I was one of the ones that they came in and gave speech therapy to, and taught me how to speak more clearly without such a bad accent that was hard to understand.
Wow. That definitely explains what was going on in the household. Wow. When you were telling that story about you not talking, and you had difficult time talking, and you had to go through some things to become better at speaking because of all the trauma you were experiencing, I thought of Maya Angelou. I don't know if you ever heard of her story, but I heard an interview that she said she stopped talking for years because she had a traumatic event, and no one thought she knew how to speak.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah.
My brother, who was a year older than me, who was also badly abused, he basically stopped talking when he was a child. I shared a bedroom with him until I was 16, and we stopped talking when I was 9, and I rarely ever heard him talk at all his whole childhood. He died as an adult, in a tragic way. But yeah, he was also in that situation where he didn't speak much at all. We were the two who, basically we weren't, I mean, I laugh, but it's sick and dark, I know, but, we weren't wanted, and my parents really had no interest in us. And, there was also the situation where my brother, who was a year older than me, well, there was a different father, but we weren't supposed, that was never supposed to be mentioned.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Family secret.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And how did your brother pass away?
When he was in his early 40s, he passed away. He starved to death. I left when I was a teenager, and I never went back. And he stayed there, and I had no contact with him. I didn't know anything really about him. And then I eventually had some communication with my mother, and she would email me sometimes, but one day she emailed me and she said that my brother died, and I didn't know which one she was talking about. I thought it was maybe my oldest brother, but it was my brother who was a year older than me. And she just said that he was in bed for two. It was a very mysterious, dark, it's a very dark story, but he apparently his whole adult life, he never had a job, and he lived in the house, and he went walking all day. And that was his entire adult life, as far as I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's horrible.
So it was an extreme childhood, and very dark and disturbing, and lots of abuse of all sorts. And I left.
Yeah. And when you left, Where did you go?
I hitchhiked in the middle of the winter because it was so violent. I thought I was going to be murdered. And I hitchhiked to California in the middle of winter when I was 16. And I saw the ocean and I thought, I want to live here. So I went back and I maybe should have figured out a way to stay here in California. But I went back because I wanted to graduate from high school, which I didn't know was a total waste of time because I learned nothing. But I went back and I graduated from high school. It was a very violent last year and a half of that. And I eventually moved. I worked in factories and saved money and I moved to California. And I got an apartment in Westwood, which is a whole other story that's really complicated. But yeah, I came to California and I had a brother who was going to be homeless. He was living out here and I didn't really know him. And so I basically saved him from that situation. But then he was an extreme alcoholic and that was a very abusive situation. And eventually I lost contact with him because he was a danger.
So at the time you moved back to California, you didn't really know anyone there.
No, I knew nobody. I didn't know anybody. I just needed to get away from Ohio. I didn't really connect with anybody in Ohio. A lot of the children who I grew up with, they didn't seem to have any real life goals or anything that I connected with. I thought I had hitchhiked out here when I was 16 and I saw what it was like. And it was something I just wanted to be here and not in Cleveland, including because there's no snow. Broke food year round. And I also thought I would end up working in the film and TV industry, which I currently do.
So hearing just this is just the iceberg of all of the experiences that you went through in childhood. I know it runs much deeper than what you're sharing, but this is a good snapshot of it. Why didn't you just continue on develop a destructive path and stay there? Because I can see how it would be easy for you to say to yourself, you know, this is what it is. I can't do any better, because you weren't learning anything from your parents. They were incapable of empowering you. So why did you become empowered to know that you could change your life?
I always had interests in a lot of things. I was very creative. I liked to paint and draw and write. And I kept a journal starting when I was a teenager. And some of my story about my childhood is in my book, Dream Another Dream. And I talk about that in there specifically to help other people, because I know there's other people who, maybe somebody listening right now is in a very, very horrible situation. They might be a teenager, they might be an adult, but I wanted to get the message out there that you can change. But when I moved out here, I ended up being around I saw what it was like with some people being very poor and some people being really wealthy. And I was in that mix, and I ended up by some fluke. I was a friend of mine from high school came out here one day and he called me and it was a total surprise. And he came out here because his mother lived out here and she lived near me. I met her once, but I didn't really know her. I didn't realize that was his mother. And I worked in a pet store. I was a dog groomer. And this woman came in and I realized that was my friend's mother, but I didn't tell her. But she ended up committing suicide. My friend came out here to clean up her apartment and I met her next door neighbor, who is an agent casting director. And he's like, you want to work on TV shows and movies? I could put you to work. So I started working on TV shows and movies. And there was a big strike in Hollywood and everything shut down. I was working a lot on different TVs and movies as an extra, because I had braces and I looked really young. So I was always cast as a high school student. But then there was a big strike in Hollywood and all the TV productions shut down. And I signed up with a temp agency to do office work. And they asked me if I'd be interested in working in someone's private home, because they need help in their office, in their mansion. And I said, sure, I'll do it. So I went and I ended up working for Peggy Lee, the singer. And she ended up asking me if I wanted to move in and be her butler. I didn't know what to say. I asked her if I could tell her the next day. So I said yes. And I ended up moving in. and being around these wealthy people like Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett and all this stuff, she had me buy black pants and white shirts and wear those every day as the butler and make her food because I knew how to make food. And she had other staff, household staff, several other, like a houseman, a maid, you know, an assistant, and all these other people who worked in the mansion. But I was in charge of the kitchen. And I ended up just seeing how people lived. And I saw how just because you're wealthy doesn't mean you're happy. Mm. And just because you're poor doesn't mean you're unhappy. I knew some poor people who are very happy and wealthy people who are very unhappy. And there was this woman who hung out in the kitchen with me. And I thought she used to work for Peggy Lee. And she was just hung out at the house and was her friend. But I ended up, she used to hang out with me in the kitchen and help me like make food and do the laundry and chop vegetables and do the dishes and stuff. And we used to talk and she always asking about my childhood. And one day Peggy Lee asked me if I knew who she was. She said, you know, your friend's an heiress, don't you? And I said, what is that? And I didn't know what that even meant. I was very naive. And it turned out that was Doris Duke, the billionaire. Well, she was worth several hundred million back then. And I didn't know that I was hanging out with this wealthy woman. And I realized after I quit, I found out who she was. She was on the front page of the LA Times. There was an article and I was like, what's going on? That's Doris. So I read the article and I was like, wait, I was hanging out with someone who was worth like $700 million doing laundry and cutting vegetables. But she was very unhappy. Uh-huh. I was like, wow, if she's unhappy. So it's up to you to make your life what it can be and, you know, tune into your talents and your intellect and your skills and develop yourself. And don't think that people who are apparently handed everything are the happier ones or the most together ones or even comfortable in their own skin. Some of I'm sure are, but I was exposed to people who absolutely were not happy and they had all the money, the wealth that someone would want, but they weren't happy. And I wanted to develop my life in a way that I used my talents and skills and all that stuff and hopefully have happiness in my life.
You couldn't write a better story than what you just told me, because how on earth does someone just ask you if you want to be in, you know, TV or whatever? Why did he even ask you that?
Because of the way I look, blonde, young, braces, I could play a high school student. He was booking background people on TV shows and movies, and he was always looking for new people to be on the TV shows. And that's how that happened. And then I also lived near the Comedy Store in Westwood. And I would hang out there, even though I was too young to even get in. You're supposed to be 21, but I was 19 at that time. And I ended up meeting a lot of people who eventually became very famous. Like I used to hang out with Arsenio Hall. And the weird thing is that he was living in his car at that time. Really? And then we were talking one day and we realized that I had met him. He was several years older than me. I met him when he was young. When I was young, I was like 10 or 11. I was 11. And he was, I don't know, 16 or something. And because a friend of mine whose father was an alcoholic, we went to try to find his father in this awful, awful part of town in Cleveland. And my friend Tom told me, oh, this Arsenio kid, he's going to start telling you about how he wants to have a talk show. And I didn't know, like, what? And so I ended up talking to Arsenio, this kid, this teenager. And yeah, he started talking about he was going to grow up and he was going to have a talk show and he was going to be like Dinah Shore and Merv Griffin. And I didn't know. I was 11. I'm like, okay. But years later, like not even 10 years later, here I am living in LA and he's living in his car trying to be a comedian. And we're hanging out at the Comedy Store. And we realized we knew each other, but then I lost contact with him. And several years later, when I started watching TV, I barely ever watched TV my whole adult life, but I was watching TV at a friend's house and I saw Arsenio had a talk show or something. I was like, what is going on?
Wow. That's amazing, because he was saying those things even though he was a teenager and it seemed to be far away from doing what he wanted to do, what he was saying, and you were seemingly far away from what you're doing right now, although you were honing those skills of writing in your journal.
Because yeah,
you know, and did you know you were a writer?
I didn't. I actually did really badly in school. I always got barely, you know, almost failing grades and everything. And somehow they just kept passing me to the next grade. And the teachers often were amazed that I could even, I don't know, they were confused by my accent. They were confused by how I could actually read out loud perfectly, but I had no idea what I was reading. And I started reading, being able to understand my reading when I was in eighth grade, because I got a newspaper route. And I was listening to the radio while I delivered newspapers, and I realized the news stories I was listening to were the same stories in the newspaper. So I started being able to read the newspaper and understand what I was reading. But and I thought that writing a book would be the coolest thing, because I started reading books and I thought that would be the coolest thing in the world to write a book. And so now I wrote Dream Another Dream, and I have the screenwriting book that I wrote, and I have some other books coming out this year, this month, a new book. But another thing that happened is when I was living in that apartment in Westwood, there was this guy who used to hang out, Tony, and he was broke and he didn't know what to do with his life. And he was 6'7" or something, and he was overweight and he was sad. And he would come by and we would hang out and he would talk. And one day we were talking about how it really doesn't seem to matter what you look like, because there's people who look like runway models and they're homeless and they're all messed up on drugs and whatever. And then there's people who would, you know, apparently never be hired as a model, and they're wealthy and they're driving really nice cars and all that stuff. So it didn't appear to be appearance, your physical structure. It's more about how you think. And that guy, Tony, eventually wrote a book called Awaken the Giant Within. And his name is Anthony Robbins, and he's now worth over $600 million.
Wow.
So it really has to do with your mind, your thinking, what you do with yourself, keeping yourself clean, nutrition, exercise, motivation, self-education. And we have access now to every kind of you could learn anything now, because there's classes on the internet. YouTube University is available to anybody with an internet connection.
True. You just have to have that desire to do. You started a writer's workshop called Screenwriting Tribe. What inspired you to, you know, start that, and you have over 1,000 members?
I eventually got involved with writing screenplays. I fell into that too, because I was living in a house that I rented, and then I met this producer who had an office nearby, and he asked me if I wanted to read. I was at a Mexican restaurant, and he asked me if I wanted to read some screenplays for him so he could ask me what I thought of them. So I started being a reader for him, and then I got jobs working for a couple other producers reading screenplays. And I always wanted to write a screenplay. I had written a couple screenplays, but they're really badly formatted. And I eventually ended up working at United Artists, MGM, the studio. And I ended up working as an assistant, one of the assistants to John Calley, the president of United Artists, who eventually ran Sony Studios. But before that, he ran Warner Brothers Studios. But when I was working for him, I saw how he would choose screenplays just by flipping through them and seeing how they were written visually, what they looked like, if they were like filled with massive amounts of words, or if they were cut down to like a lot of white space and easier to read. And he didn't really want to read the ones that were badly written. He said, if the writers aren't going to spend the time to polish their screenplays, I'm not going to spend the time to read them. And so I got interested in that. I wrote a couple more screenplays, and then some big people got interested in them, and then those didn't get made. One got financed, and then that fell apart because the producers started suing each other. And I eventually started helping other people with their screenplays, and I was a member of another workshop, and they had too many members, so they wanted another work And I helped run that workshop. And so they thought I would be a good one to start the other workshop. And I did that. And that was 7 years ago. And I started it. And then I wrote a book about screenwriting because I learned so much about screenwriting. And I used to help people write books. I was a ghostwriter for a lot of authors. And so I wrote my own book, Screenwriting Tribe, and that's on Amazon. And now it's used as a textbook in some film schools. And my screenwriting workshop had now grew to over 1,000 members. And we have two workshops every Sunday for up to 20 people. And I help people write their screenplays and polish them and get them ready to show them to producers and agents and managers and financiers and all that stuff.
Wow. So how... Wow, it's amazing the different things that you've done. I mean, you just evolved. Do you find it easy to connect with people a little better now?
Yeah, I'm very I'm very social. That's one thing that the COVID when the COVID shut everything down, I didn't know what to do with myself, so I wrote and I finished Dream Another Dream, which is a book I had been working on for years and years and years. That came out last summer. Now I have another book coming out this month that's a follow-up to this book and a couple other books coming out this year. But I'm very social. I'm around a lot of people. I'm kind of the ringleader. I've always been like with my friends, like, let's go camping and let's go this, let's go do that. Let's go to this restaurant. Let's go hiking. And so I'm always the person who kind of gets things, people to do things. And
so you're the front man in your friend group. Okay. And you also had a parenting magazine.
When I was in college, I worked for a small newspaper and selling advertising and doing all sorts of stuff. It was basically do everything, help the publisher. There were maybe 8 employees and we all kind of ended up doing everything. And this newspaper came out twice a month. It was in Woodland Hills in the San Fernando Valley area of Los Angeles. And once a month or every 2 weeks, there would be a special, or maybe once a month, there would be a special insert and featuring some, like 1 month it would be about financing, 1 month it would be about real estate, another month it would be about something else. And one day the publisher asked me if I had any ideas what the insert could be for the next month. And I said, what about what to do with your children for school? Because summer was coming up. And we could do an insert about what to do with your children for the summer. So we sold 12 pages of advertising within just a couple of weeks. And I got the idea where, I could have my own parenting magazine. And so I got a financer and I started that. And then I sold it. And then I ended up working for newspapers and or newsweeklies in Los Angeles. One was LA Reader. And then New Times Los Angeles. And then I ended up working for Backstage West, which is the bi-weekly acting newspaper. That's not a business. But yeah, that's how that happened.
How can people contact you if they wanted to, you know, work with you in any way?
Well, the screenwriting workshop is on meetup.com. It's called Screenwriting Tribe, and they could click on there. And then I'm on Twitter, Daniel John Dijon Carey. My nickname's Dijon because Daniel John are my first names. I was called Dijon since I was a baby. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, good. Dijon, like the mustard.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know it was mustard until I was 11 and some girl called me Dijon mustard. And I didn't know what she was talking about.
Well, what is your one to grow on? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience with?
You can use your power and your energy and your intellect and your yearning and your skills and your, you know, to create the life you want that's right for you and live your life, not someone else's. Tune into who you are. You probably already know who you are. Just tune into it. Develop your skills. Study hard. Work hard. Eat a clean diet that affects your brain and all your tissues. Exercise every morning and create your life.
Thank you for listening to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today's episode has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum.